Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about how healthcare providers can reopen and recover from the COVID-19 outbreak that caused their patient volume and their revenue to drop through the floor. So today we're going to talk about what hospitals and medical practices are doing to reopen and recover, what they should be doing to reopen and recover, and what they'll look like in the future after they reopen and recover. Now, to answer those burning questions are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Gary Bisbee, co-founder and executive chairman of the Health Management Academy. Dave, Gary, how are you gentlemen doing?
Good morning.
Glad it's Friday, Dave.
That makes about 300 million of us, right? All right. Now, before we talk about providers reopening and recovering, I'm just curious if the hospitals or the doctors you guys use have reopened or done anything that has you scratching your head, in a good way or a bad way. Dave, any head scratching going on?
Well, this is a small thing seemingly, but in some ways is extraordinary. A couple of weeks ago, I got a call from my primary care doctor's office just wanting to know how I was doing, whether, I had any health issues that had cropped up. They wanted to know that they had COVID-19 testing available if I needed it, and just generally checking in on me. And it doesn't seem like that extraordinary thing, but the health system historically, as we all know, hasn't been necessarily that great at reaching out and connecting and engaging with their consumers. So I took that as a positive.
No, that's great. Gary, same thing. Any curious or new moves by the hospitals or doctors that you use?
Well, I work in the healthcare field, so I've learned a long time ago to stay as far away from any doctor or hospital as I can.
Yeah, on my end, the pediatrician we use wants you to wait outside the building until you get a text that says it's safe to come in for your appointment. So I guess it's kind of like a curbside pickup, but for medical care. So,
Dave, my sister gave me a T-shirt once that said you're only young once, but you can be immature forever. So the fact you still got a pediatrician doesn't surprise me at all.
I'm impressed.
All right. Yeah. All right. I'm glad it's Friday now for sure. All right. Let's talk about hospitals and medical practices reopening in recovering. Dave, what are you seeing or hearing hospitals and practices do in that regard?
Mike Tyson famously said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. President Eisenhower agreed with Tyson. He said, all plans are worthless, but he went on to expound that planning is everything. Hospitals and health systems are making plans to reopen and recover within a very fluid and dynamic operating environment, and they just have to be flexible and resilient. There are multiple new variables not under their control: disease spread, testing capabilities, patient behaviors, level of government support, on top of the factors that were already roiling the industry before COVID: new competitors, regulatory change, payment reform, transparency, and changing payer mix. It's really now, amid COVID, it's become a really nasty two-level problem with short and long-term strategic implications. Let's focus on the short term. First, you got to get the volume back, and then two, regain financial sustainability. Getting the volume back has been primarily an effort to redesign facility and practice design to make sure that they're safe and limited infection. Also got to get adequate supplies, PPE and other, need to reach out and reconnect with patients. So that's where most of the effort is going. On the financial side, the challenge is breathtaking. There's this Kaufman Hall AHA margin study that's just out that said, pre-COVID margins were very slim, 3.5%. In the second quarter, they fell to negative 3%. That's bad enough, but it would have been negative 15% without the CARES funding, and they say absent more government spending or support, it'll be negative 7% in the second half of 2020. Health systems are doing the usual things. They know how to deal with cost pressure. So they amp up revenue cycle, you try to get better on supply chain, you address labor, do some clinical redesign, that type of thing. But I worry that it just may not be enough, that what we really need is fundamental design, redesign of the system that creates opportunity, but also is replete with disruption. Almost sounds like a revolution.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Gary, same thing. What are hospitals and medical practices doing to reopen and recover right now?
Well, Dave did a good job of covering some of the main points. Let me think about this from the standpoint of strategy and tactics. I'll kind of go at a higher level here. First thing they have to do is just don't close again. And the problem that we had, of course, was that there was a shortfall of data. Virtually every government in the country decided that they were going to be hit hard by the surge and asked or commanded the health systems to close, shut down. And most of the health systems, the reality, didn't get hit hard by the surge. It was very localized. And so since then, one of the things that the health systems have been doing that I think is exactly the right thing to do is to form relationships with the government so that there's some texture in this decision making. The assumption that the hospitals couldn't handle that, I don't think is a good assumption. And so our leaders on the hospital health system side have been working with governments to let them know. Obviously, they're building up their supplies of PPE. Some of them have done an impressive job of that.
Got it. Dave, anything to add to Gary's comments?
We did a kind of blunt shutdown of all non-essential care across the country. And it's not exactly whack-a-mole, but surges of COVID hit different parts of the country at different times. And we have to be flexible as an overall system. And then institutions have to be flexible in their markets to be able to respond to surges and to have procedures in place to address both COVID and non-COVID patients simultaneously. So we really have to learn to live with this.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Now, let's talk about basically the follow-up to that first question, and that's what hospitals and medical practices should be doing to reopen and recover, and what that means for how they will sustain their operations in the future. Gary, what are they not doing that they should be doing?
Well, let me come at this, Dave, a bit differently, which is what did they learn from COVID to date? Let's cover three specific points. One of them is speed of decision making. There was the circumstance where New York Presbyterian more than doubled ICU beds, went from 400 to 900 virtually overnight. And there are a number of other stories about how the health systems reacted to this surge with lightning-like speed of decision-making. Can we and should they think about that and figure out how they can apply the strategies they use to make these rapid decisions, apply them to the normal course of business? So that's one thing that I think that many of them have learned, and they're working to do that. Another thing is to embed and build on positive changes. Telemedicine is one thing. How do they use that as part of the routine treatment paradigms now, not only for primary care, but specialty care? A lot of them are working hard on that. And what about remote working, people not needing to work at the facility, but they can work from home or someplace offsite? How can the health systems, hospitals use that to their advantage? And another thing, the third thing, is a core competency of scaling up and scaling down. So where there is a surge, where there is a need, to change people, change assets, and so on, developing a competency to quickly scale up and scale down is clearly necessary. So those are three things that I see that they're working on to a greater or lesser degree, and we hope that they will really be aggressive in working in those three areas.
Got it. Thanks, Gary. Dave, what should hospitals and medical practices be doing to ensure their financial viability in the future? What have they learned that they could use moving forward?
Well, Gary did a nice job of identifying, you know, three things going on right now that I think are very noteworthy, you know, speed of decision making, building on the positive, and then being able to scale up and down quickly. I'll focus my remarks on the mindset of patients and what it's going to take to bring patients back to the hospitals. You would have thought with the loss or the shutting down of elective procedures that once they opened back up, there would have been huge pent-up demand, and we would have gone from pre-COVID levels to 110, 125% of pre-COVID levels. And what we're really finding is that it's kind of come in around 70, 75%. So the patients aren't coming back. Gensler, the architectural and design firm, did a really interesting survey in 50 cities, and they have concluded that there's been a major loss of confidence among consumers in the U.S. health system. Numbers go down when you talk specifically about their doctor. It's a little like the old adage, you know, people hate Congress but love their representative. But 35% have lost confidence. And human beings aren't machines. We're emotional. Emotions influence our medical decision making. And I think it's incumbent on the health systems to do like many companies in the retail sector have done, which is to get into the heads of consumers and adapt their ways of doing, you know, pre-visit, visit, and post-visit in ways that recognize our own fears, beliefs, orientation. So if someone's going to need a lot of hand-holding to get back into the system, we ought to figure that out at pre-visit and make sure it's available. Healthcare's tended to have the approach of optimizing efficiency, which leads to a one-size-fits-all type of customer experience. And I really think we need to break away from that and start treating people in a much more individual way. And I actually think that's an enormous opportunity for the right thinking systems, because as the system itself becomes more consumer-centric and retail-oriented, having those skills will be exceptionally important in being able to compete effectively for market share.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Gary, anything to add to Dave's comments on adopting a more consumer-centric approach and customization?
Well, sure. I think inherent in what Dave's saying is that those that are learners, those leaders that are going to learn from this will change their health systems or their hospitals or their practices for the good. Those that aren't so good at learning could end up being behind the eight ball here, because this is a pretty dramatic change in both the demand function, as Dave said, and a number of supply issues, to say nothing of how the government is going to react to this. Which is a huge variable. So in any event, I think that Dave nailed it there.
Got it. Thanks, Gary. Why don't we talk about next week? Gary, what's everyone in healthcare talking about next week?
Well, I don't know what everyone in healthcare is talking about, but I do think that the government is making decisions, whether it's transparency, whether it's paying for televisits, whether it's allowing physicians to practice across state lines. There's just a number of decisions that the federal government, particularly CMS, is making that it would be good for us to track, because I think over the course of the next couple of years, government involvement here is going to be even more influential than it has been.
Got it. Dave, what's the healthcare water cooler conversation next week?
Well, personally, I'm paying much more attention to washing my hands since the president has encouraged us to do that this week. All attention is going to be focused on the next round of stimulus, and much of that is beyond healthcare, but a big chunk of it is within healthcare, and it's really going to be interesting to see how Congress and the administration craft a package that pumps more stimulus into the economy. We are at a really interesting place in terms of monetary policy. Many of the old rules of thumb don't seem to apply. The government does seem to be able to borrow almost without limitation, and that maybe the level of debt isn't the most important thing. It's really factors related to employment and productivity and GDP and so on. I'm incredibly curious to see how that's going to unfold. And we know we didn't spend enough or didn't put enough stimulus in after the 2008-2009 recession. I don't think we're going to make the same mistake this time, but you never know.
It'll be interesting. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, question here is, Dave, where are we going to be in 5 years when interest rates start going back up? All this debt.
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually sit here and debate with myself, which is highly entertaining. Is our bigger fear inflation or deflation? You know, it wasn't that long ago we actually had oil prices go negative. So it's, I'm glad there are people smarter than me trying to figure out what the economics, macroeconomics of the global economy are today.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Gary. It certainly will be interesting. Also, stay away from stormtroopers. We've got a podcast taping next week. That's all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.